press record. So, nothing that the Buddha teaches is Sunday school teaching to make some God happy at your expense. We've all grow up around parents who say, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. We hear rules in school, you shouldn't, you know, mistalk, you shouldn't do this, you should do that. And we begin to believe that these guidances that we're taught are to make other people happy or to make some arbitrary God happy. But all of the things that the Buddha listed in his teachings are not to appease some God. They're actually for the goal of relieving us of our own suffering. There's nothing here that's taught that's simply to make other people happy or to sacrifice yourself without giving you any lasting peace. The entire point of forgiveness is so that we can end our own suffering. And we do that, ironically perhaps, paradoxically perhaps, we do this by forgiving. Now, the Buddha listed in one of my favorite suttas, Kadana, seven reasons why it says it's bad news to carry anger around. I sort of love the Buddha's lists. They're really, the guy can make lists like you couldn't believe. Just love similes, lists, repetitious teaching. I'm sort of glad I got actually to read him than actually sit through some of these, but I'm going to read you some of the reasons. He says, we don't want to carry anger because, well, it makes us unattractive. We look sickly and out of sorts. It makes it difficult to sleep peacefully. The thoughts themselves lead to suffering. It leads to what's called papancha. Papancha literally means times 10, but it's thoughts that take over the mind and then becomes also as well the dhamma. Gut feelings that keep us clenched. And there's all sorts of studies about the cumulative damaging health effects that carrying around anger has. It's very, very physically and mentally unskillful thing to carry around. Nothing, the Buddha says, we gain through anger less because we probably acquired it inappropriately. It's through suffering and stress and anger that we act and we continue suffering and stress. Suffering and harm and violence doesn't come out of the blue. It comes when people are suffering themselves and can't hold it anymore, so they externalize it. They take it out on somebody else. I can't hold this feeling anymore of how much I hate, you know, the way I've been treated. I perceive I've been treated. So I have to get it out of me, and I'm going to get it out of me by taking it out on you. And this perpetuates the cycle of hatred, and it never ends. It becomes this cycle. And generally, anything we acquire through it is acquired unskillfully and won't last. Our reputations, the Buddha says, suffer. People want to avoid us. They don't like hanging around people when they're really angry because it makes us very caught up. We're not aware. We're not truly involved or listening or participating. We're caught up in a story that keeps us from being truly present, and it keeps us focusing all the attention on ourselves. And finally, there's the karmic results, the long-term results. Even if your anger passes, the long-term results of carrying around resentments, the stories of resentments, can way outlast the short-term effects that we see visibly. There's long-term results of living in a mind that's filled with resentment. It becomes harder to be open and trust other people. It becomes harder to build meaningful relationships. Now, nobody is saying to, I'm sure somebody's going to ask this question, so I'm going to try to jump the gun, but still you're going to ask it anyway, because that's just the kind of thing you do. But nobody is saying to quell the feeling, to quell the you know, when you've been mistreated, there's what's known as vedana, gut feelings that arise. And the Buddha says, notice them. Notice the feeling tones of anger, but not to live in the story. You can tell a story over and over and over again, and it won't go away. But if you allow a feeling to arise, it will eventually pass. I was in family therapy with my father, and at one point, the therapist, who was a Buddhist, said, why do you mistreat your kids this way? And my dad said, well, because my mommy didn't treat me well. And the therapist said, Bill, you're 85 years old. How long have you been carrying around this story with you? It didn't over 75 years. My dad was carrying around it and using it as a justification of unskillful action. You know, so the idea that you're going to come across the winning argument to make your anger go away, to make the story go away, it's not true. There's always going to be a rebuttal of the next day the court case is going to be up to the next higher court. You think you've won the argument in your head with anger, but then it comes back. There's always more to it. So the trick is to feel the feelings, but not to overly engage the story. Noah's going to talk about how we do that. Skillful actions like this, forgiveness, aren't easy. It's going to take a lot of time. There's no magic bullet. And when you start tonight's practice, I urge you to start with somebody easy. Don't go to the person who just broke up with you or the person who's mistreated you the most in your life. You probably won't notice any ease. It's much better to choose somebody at first as a practice that has acted a little unskillfully and work with them and then build up the muscle of this practice so that you can open it up to the much older historical ones. And I do encourage you to be very patient because there is no spiritual practice that works like this. Sometimes we can go into a meditation that can make us feel almost immediately better. But in general, the things that cause lasting suffering take a long time to relieve ourselves of. The good news is that we do acquire a lasting release in the long term, but it takes lasting effort. It takes patience. It's not going to happen tonight. Unless you choose somebody who's you're not really that angry with. Might. I don't know. It's important also to reflect, a couple of last notes, that you look around and you might see in the world not a lot of other people are practicing forgiveness. You might even notice that the person who's you're going to work on forgiving isn't going to forgive you. Most of the times in life, there's two sides of the story. We're pissed off at them, they're pissed off at us, and we think, well, why should I forgive them when that schmuck, I know that schmuck, is not going to forgive me? A couple of notes about that. Number one, again, we're doing this for your happiness, suggesting it. B, nothing you forgive, no one you forgive, ever gets them off the hook. If they've committed a crime or if they've done something that's totally, you know, beyond the pale, they have to not only live in the karmic results of being in such a mind that did such a thing, that altered such a behavior towards you, they have to live in the results. And very often, you might think, well, they're getting away with it. But I guarantee you, you cannot look into another person's mind and see the results of their actions. They have to live with the results. And that's the thing about suffering. Lots of people suffer, and we don't know it. I guarantee you that if somebody's acted unskillfully to you, they have to live in the results. And you don't need to add any more misery onto it. When you think about it, why would you want to make your happiness contingent upon what somebody else does? Forgiveness brings a sense of peace of mind. But if you say, I'm not going to forgive them until they at least show the signs of forgiving me, you're making your happiness contingent upon their actions. Do you want your happiness to be contingent upon what somebody else does? No. again, reflecting on karma, we know they have to live in the results. They're not let off the hook. And by the way, this is just, I can guarantee you this, as much as I can guarantee you anything. You're not powerful enough to make anybody else's life easier by forgiving them. Your mind is not that powerful enough. Just because you've forgiven them doesn't mean the world is going to change and open the part, the seas for them, and they're going to magically not suffer. I have talked to monks, and I know this to be the case. I've talked to Ajahn Amaro, Thanissara Bhikkhu, Ajahn Sucito, and they all assure me that if you forgive someone, it doesn't mean they get off the hook or their life is any easier. No one is that powerful. Maybe Buddha was that. I don't know. But you're not. So, hate to break it to you, but then it's better that I bring you the bad news rather than no. So, start with somebody not too difficult. Be patient. Reflect that even if you're letting go of the story you tell about them, that it doesn't get them off the hook. They have to live in the results of their actions. There's nothing we need to do, and we don't want to make our peace of mind the telling of that story, which causes so much suffering of how we've been mistreated over and over again. We don't want to have that taking up so much space and causing us so much suffering. This is a very, very profound practice that gets to the heart of so much of the mental papancha and storytelling that we carry around with us. So I think that's basically enough to... I don't think I want to overload you. I think it's good to go now to the actual practice itself of how to forgive.
Before I talk about practice, a few personal reflections. One is that when I began practicing Buddhism, mindfulness made a lot of sense. The practical, pay attention to the present moment, the future sucks, the past sucks. But if I just feel my breath right now, there's a little bit less suckiness than what my mind tends to create. The present physical experience, when I began meditating, was much better than the imagined future and the resented past, or imagined past. Mindfulness made a lot of sense to me. And when I started studying Buddhism, which wasn't until, you know, really a year or a couple of years after I started meditating, first mindfulness meditation, just practicing it, and then I started to kind of say, well, what did this Buddha fellow have to say? First thing I saw was he said suffering. He talked about the suffering in life, and I was like, okay, I can trust this guy. Mm-hmm. He's talking about suffering, and I know suffering. He's talking about reality, of how difficult it is with our human minds and all of the cravings and attachments and aversions and anger and resentment. And I don't know when, but pretty early on in my practice, I also started hearing about loving kindness and compassion and forgiveness. And I was really skeptical. I was like, well, the suffering, okay, I got that. Kindness, compassion, and then I heard teachers saying, like, oh, it's your Buddha nature. You're compassionate in there somewhere. You're really a loving person underneath all of your hatred. Underneath it. Oh, that's who you really are. and I've been meditating. I've been looking. I didn't see any compassionate, kind, loving, forgiving little gnome inside of me. Little Buddha, nature, whatever that's supposed to be. I saw a mind that most of the time was planning on how I can get some pleasure and how I can avoid some pain. And but the mindfulness practice brought me over and over into contact with how much suffering there is when we meet life with aversion, which is what I've been doing my whole life. Pushing away and trying to cling and hold on to what was impossible to hold on to. Pleasure, pleasant experiences. In the beginning, I thought that maybe even the maybe the Buddha really didn't teach forgiveness and compassion. Maybe it was the hippies, they added that shit in. The hippies are teaching Buddhism, they added that flowery shit in. Mindfulness, suffering, got it. Love, compassion, not so sure. What has become clear over the years of meditation practice is that mindfulness is just the prerequisite. The whole point of mindfulness, it's not the solution in itself, actually. The whole point of mindfulness is to bring us into the reality of our minds and our bodies and our hearts, to let go of the fantasy of the future and the past and to come to the here and now. And when we're present, when we are mindful, then we realize there is another step necessary. Being present is not enough. Being mindful is not enough. There is a further intervention necessary. Because mindfulness just shows us how resentful we are, how filled with anger we are. Oh, I'm mindful of how much I want to kill you. It's fantastic. This mindfulness stuff really is great. Mindful of how much lust I have, how much greed I have, how much mindfulness just shows us what's happening. Then an intervention. Then an appropriate response. The main way that I think it's talked about in Theravadan Buddhism, and especially in the Western insight Buddhist scene, Vipassana scene, is through metta, loving kindness. And the Metta Sutta, the Buddha says, this is what should be done by those who wish to be skilled in goodness and to know the path of peace. If you want to be, you know, paraphrase, if you want to be happy, here's the way to be happy. Be mindful, and when you're mindful, follow it up with a heart intervention, a wise response of the heart or mind, whatever we want to call it, that meets everyone with kindness. In the Metta Sutta, there's a line when the Buddha said, let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Right? So this is a task for us to look at. How often am I angry and filled with ill will and resentment and wishing harm upon those who've harmed me? Or maybe not even have harmed me, but are just real assholes. Harming other people. They're just really inconsiderate. Or our, you know, political enemies, or our social, economic, whatever enemies. How often are we living in anger and ill will? Clearly, if you want to be happy, the Buddha is saying, we have to free ourselves. Mindfulness shows us how often we're living in anger and ill will. He goes on to say, talks about honesty. He says, to not deceive each other, nor what's the word? Nor despise any being in any state. If you want to be happy, if we want to be happy, to free ourselves from spite, from despising resentment, period. I think this is huge and under highlighted, not spoken about quite enough. The importance of forgiveness as a prerequisite to happiness, to freedom. So, and I think that this is true in my own life. I didn't really start to experience contentment and ease and well-being and some of the Buddha qualities, the factors of enlightenment, the wisdom and ease that's available until I had forgiven myself. Right? And forgiving all living beings means we have to start often with ourselves, or at least finish with ourselves, or sometime or another get around to forgiving ourselves and everyone else. We have to be careful in our meditation practices that we're not using meditation to avoid. As I said, if we're truly being mindful, then we really are seeing the mind and what it's clinging to. But it's easy to take the meditation instructions and hear, just pay attention to your breath so that you can ignore your mind. Have you sort of heard that or misunderstood that sometimes? If you just pay attention to your breath, then you can ignore your life and how fucking angry you really are, how scared you are, how much grief you have, how much lust is running your life. Just pay attention to your breath and you can ignore it all. You have to be really careful for misusing what we sometimes call using meditation as a bypass, a spiritual bypass. This is not the teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha's teaching is so clearly asking us to sit in the midst of reality, to not avoid anything. Mm-hmm. Paying attention to the breath in order to avoid, you know, to let go of the future and the past is a good preliminary training to become more concentrated. But we can only use it for a little while. Has to be expanded if we want liberation, if we want happiness. So beginning this intervention with ourselves, of beginning to be kind, to be loving, to be forgiving, to be compassionate towards what's really happening in our minds and in our hearts, being honest with what's going on. I really believe that if I know when I started practice, I sort of had the different lists, and when I got willing to do loving kindness and to do forgiveness, and kind of like, okay, I can have kindness and forgiveness for these people on this list, the easy ones, and then the sort of maybe list, maybe eventually I'll be able to forgive, be kind and compassionate, and then the list that says never, no fucking way. I'm not forgiving Reagan. Does that date me?
It does.
Adolf, whoever. I actually believe if we want to be fully happy, we have to forgive everyone. Everyone. Eventually. Not that, like, I love what Josh was saying. Gentle, slow, gradual. I like to quote what the Dalai Lama said when he says, well, like, how long is this thing going to take? And he said, I don't know, but only check in on your progress once every decade. It's a lifetime's work to forgive all beings. To live from the heart, to be kind and compassionate. plan on it taking 10 years. Do the practice every day, plan on it being a 10-year process, rather than I'm going to do it all today. I think that that's much wiser. But know that it's possible, completely available to live free from resenting any living being or dead being. Mm-hmm. And that there's a happiness and a freedom in that process of forgiveness. That is a necessary part of our spiritual development, our life. Before we do some practice in that direction, curious to have some conversation with you about it. Questions for Josh or I about this, about any aspect.
When we go to questions, by the way, I just wanted to say, I remember I forgot to mention, if you're in an abusive situation in life, please get safe first before you forgive. Don't try to get through the idea that abusive situations can be tackled by forgiving. Forgiving is a huge part of the spiritual practice, but it's also important to see when you're in a situation that you need to remove yourself from it, and then once you've felt the feelings and you're safe, then move on. Now, questions, please.
My father used to say that forgiveness means letting them back into your heart, not necessarily ever back into your home.
Exactly.
So forgiveness with boundary, with appropriate boundary that says, like, I'm going to forgive you in my heart, in my mind. I'm not going to have anything to do with you, for, you know, if that's necessary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, please. Thing that is important is to having the intention to forgive. Just trying. Making it the forefront. I'm going to try to be loving and kind and compassionate and forgiving. And I'm going to try through some internal discipline practices. So I'm going to say some words and phrases and stuff, but you can make them your own, and the most important part is just the attempt to live in this way. If you try, if you head your life's energy in the direction of forgiveness, it will happen for you. You'll forgive everyone, however long it takes. You'll forgive yourself. It might take a while. So being comfortable, but when you're ready, allowing your eyes to close. Settling into your body, and imagine breathing into your sternum, into your heart center, your heart chamber. What's happening in your body, in your chest, in this place that we call our hearts, where we experience joy and sorrow, both love and anger experienced in the heart. Reflecting on your own life and all of the times when you've been unskillful, unwise, unkind. When your pain has been too much to hold. Your desire, your fear. Breathing into the humility of our own imperfections, lack of wisdom, unskillfulness. Knowing that we've all hurt people. And for this practice, just in a general way, opening to forgiveness, to the humility of making amends and asking for forgiveness. Someone specific comes to mind, you can just say to them, please forgive me. Please forgive me for having caused you harm. Whether it was intentional or unintentional, whether it's through my words or my actions. Please forgive me. You just imagine and set the intention to be asking for forgiveness all of the time. All of the time that we're impatient, that we're angry, that we're afraid, that we're greedy, all of the times when we're ignoring, we're abandoning, when we're not living in the wisest ways, asking for forgiveness. Setting the intention to make amends. Please forgive me. And with this humble understanding that all harm is caused out of ignorance, not because we're bad people, we're just sometimes confused, sometimes in pain, sometimes afraid or ignorant. It's also true with all of the people that have harmed us, all of the people that cause any harm in this world, just suffering, just confused, just in so much pain or ignorance that it's spilling out onto others, perhaps spilling out onto us. I'm beginning to offer forgiveness. I forgive you for causing so much harm, or maybe even the little ways, just for offending me, for annoying me. The intention to meet difficult people, situations, with forgiveness and compassion. I forgive you as much as I can in this moment. I set the intention to forgive everyone for everything, however long it takes, to train my heart and mind to meet reality with compassion and forgiveness. breathing into your heart center and turning towards yourself. You've been so critical of yourself, so much comparing to others, so much judging. So much craving, so much aversion. So often ignoring yourself, looking for attention, looking for love from someone else. All of the ways that we betray ourselves every day. So we are unkind, unskillful, unwise. Our minds, the judging mind, the lustful body, the injured heart. Turn towards yourself with as much forgiveness as you can. I forgive you to yourself, to this mind, to this heart, this body, to your past. To the child, the teenager, the adolescent, and the adult, I forgive you. As much as I can in this moment. Say your own first name to yourself. And I forgive you for not knowing how to handle the pain, the fear, the desire. Forgive you for the stress. I forgive you for the lack of forgiveness. Using your own name in your heart, the intention to forgive completely, with compassion, with mercy, with love, to invite ourselves back into our own hearts, spreading this intention of forgiveness to everyone here in this room, forgiving each other, the Sangha, the community, for breathing too loud, for stealing my cushion last week, for not buzzing the door fast enough, spreading it out into the streets of the city. Even the cab drivers and the cops. Everyone. Throughout all the boroughs, out into the ocean. East, west, north, south. Including all living beings with compassion and kindness. With the wish, may all beings be at ease. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be met with compassion and forgiveness. Even just a 10-minute practice like this will begin to make a huge difference. I've often thought that if, and said that if people came and I actually had more maybe control and it was a more sort of set thing where I knew you were coming and you were going to be here, Josh, or, but I might say, you know, spend the first couple of years just practicing forgiveness every day. It's like the 12 steps. They put meditation as the 11th step after you've made your amends, after you've done the forgiveness work. Then they say, okay, now sit down and meditate. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Until we've forgiven ourselves and others and made amends, your mind has so much ammunition, it makes it hard to meditate. Once you've forgiven everyone, everything, it makes it much more pleasant to be with yourself in the quiet moments. So these are some of my thoughts about practice, and I've appreciated being here. And sorry we didn't have more time for discussion, but I'll turn it over to Josh for anything closing.
No, I think actually we've covered the ground for tonight. So I just want to thank you all for coming. And if you want to, if you're too shy to, or didn't get a chance to ask a question, please come up, introduce yourself. We always like meeting people. Here's your opportunity to meet Noah. And so thank you for coming, and I'll see you next Tuesday. And if you're ever in L.A., where do they go?
Well, yeah, if you're out on the West Coast, we have a couple of places